Kopf der Woche Podcast.
Willkommen zum Podcast von Kopf der Woche. Die kenianische IT-Vorreiterin Juliana Rottig erhält den Afrika-Preis 2019 der Deutschen Afrika-Stiftung. Übergeben wurde der Preis an sie von Kanzlerin Angela Merkel. Der Erfolg mache ja auch anderen Frauen Mut. Sie zeige, wie man mit Entschlossenheit und guten Ideen Dinge bewegen kann. Wirtschaftlich, gesellschaftlich und über Landesgrenzen hinaus, sagte Merkel. Juliana Rottig entwickelte die Plattform Ushahidi und ist Mitgründerin der Technologieplattform BRIC. Das Gespräch führen wir auf Englisch.
Thanks for joining us. You are awarded this year with a prize from the German African Foundation. Why is this important for you?
The German Africa Prize from the foundation, for me, it honors not only the idea of collaboration, because a lot of the work that is honored was done in collaboration with my co-founders and also with the global community of developers who helped to bring together Ushahidi and then later also the co-founders that I worked with for BRIC. And it also honors future collaborations that I'm involved in, but also that I hope other young people in Africa are involved in. And it also honors the digital or technology space, which means a lot to me and also to other young people where I'm from.
So what you're doing is very technically driven in the first sight. Can you compare the startup scene, the technical scene in Kenya with the technical scene in the rest of the world?
Just as you have startups solving different problems, there's some problems that are more that are global, and there's some problems that are a bit more localized. And so you have various startups solving different problems. I think one of the shared challenges is pulling together good talent. So there's lots of similarity in some of the challenges that startups in Kenya and startups in around the world have to contend with, which is pulling together the right talent, pulling together the right capital, and not just financial capital. I'm also talking about other forms of capital, like network capital, human capital, like I mentioned, and then also advisory, you know, having access to someone who has done it before and can help you navigate what it means to try and solve a problem using technology.
Are there some challenges which are very special for the Kenyan startup scene?
Yes, one of those specific challenges is access to pre-seed capital, pre-seed and seed capital. In some cases, in other parts of the world, you may be able to access some money from either your parents or friends. However, most startups in Kenya are not able to access that kind of capital, because it just isn't available. And then also we do not have enough. Now we have more funds that are geared towards helping businesses in East Africa, particularly, and other African countries. However, we need more so that we can take more risks. So startups in East Africa, particularly, and other parts of Africa, because you have limited amounts of money, you're not able to take big risks. You have to take considered risks because the capital can only give you a couple of months runway to get really good runway so that you can take off. Sometimes it's much harder to get.
But does these difficult circumstances maybe lead into another way of innovations?
Yes, it provides constraints, which can actually sharpen the innovation and help us, push us and challenge us to get things out to market faster and learn as fast as we can, because we just don't have the benefit of time and resources so we have to figure out how best to serve the user's needs as quickly as possible. Yeah, so there's a lot of pressure.
One thing I really connect with Kenya is M-Pesa. This is also a system which is, I believe, only possible to have in Kenya. How do you see developments like that?
I applaud Safaricom, and I think one of the things that is really exciting is what they do for availing opportunities for women. So Safaricom is one of those companies that not only encourages women in technology within the company, but also reserves 10% of its procurement for women-led businesses. So it's great as an innovation, but it's also a great company that cares about opening the door for women and young people.
You raised the topic. How would you describe the role of women in the Kenya tech scene?
Part and parcel of it. I think women have always been part of the tech story, which I'm very happy about. And the really encouraging thing is there are various organizations, both in Nairobi, and there's also an organization in Turkana, which is in the northern part of the country, working to include, to make sure that the pipeline of women in technology is healthy. Some of these organizations are Tech Dada in Turkana, Akira Chicks in Nairobi, and there's the Educator Global Initiative that is working with next-gen robotics engineers and mechanical engineers and working with young people to encourage them to study sciences and electronics. So the ratio is not where it needs to be. It's still quite low. But I'm encouraged when we have organizations working to change the ratio and to make a healthy pipeline.
Great. How do you see the civil society developing in Kenya?
Civil society is an important part of Kenyan society. I think, as with all democracies, democracy is a progressive thing. You don't say today we have a democracy. It's always something that you're working towards. So civil society in Kenya is a very important voice as the country continues to interrogate its constitution, the needs of the economy, the needs of the citizens, and also technology and the uptake of that by government for services for citizens and also citizens to be able to access government services. So these are all things that civil society helps to ask questions and to encourage debate about what's in the public good.
One of your first projects was a software which helps the civil society. How does the change the use of the software during the last 12 years?
It continues to be an important Ushahidi, the crowdsourcing platform, I think is what you're referring to. It was used. What's been really gratifying is to see the platform going beyond activism users. Not to say that there's anything wrong with activism users, because those activism use cases, then crisis mapping use cases, election monitoring use cases, and even other unexpected use cases like favorite burgers or like nice burgers where you could find them. There was a burger map in the US, which was one of my favorite. And it's really great to see the way it has evolved over time. I still feel that the platform can still be used to crowdsource to power civic projects. So, for example, we still have lots of challenges where in various parts of the world you may have infrastructure that may not necessarily be maintained to the level that it needs to. So basically potholes. It's a bit of a pet peeve for most people, and it would be nice if there's a way to report non-emergency works that could be done by government or local municipalities. So you can, there's a company in the US called C-Click-Fix, started by Ben Berkowitz. I love what they've done with the idea of crowdsourcing, but then also creating a closed loop between citizens and local government, so that when you take a picture and say, there's this pothole or there's this thing that is broken, that it goes to somebody who can do something about it, but then you can also get notified when something is done about it. So I'd like to see more use cases like that, where we can see a direct benefit to somebody lending a voice and saying, hey, this is something that needs to be fixed, and then somebody actually fixing it. Ideally, it would be great if we could fix some of these problems ourselves, if at all possible, and if we can find a way to just make sure that information flows in an efficient manner, but the bedrock of it is response, because there's no point in crowdsourcing information if that information is not responded to. Because at the end of the day, we want to see a change, right? Yeah, so I'd like to see more. I still would encourage people to look up the Ushahidi platform and see how they can use it in their own localities.
Just getting back to the civil society, East African, the region is getting closer together with the East African Union. What does this mean for the civil society?
So the European Union, I think the fact that the European Union exists is a very important learning lesson, because there's a lot more that unites us than what divides us. And I think continuing relationship between the EU and East Africa, I think, is important, because there have been, in history, there have been previous efforts to unite, be it the East African community or with the Africa Free Trade Area agreement that is coming up. It's a source of hope that we can have more unity, but then also more discoverability of each other, so that we can reduce the barriers for trade and for engagement for civil society.
What are you expecting from this African Trade Union?
The Africa Free Trade Area Agreement? I'm hopeful. I don't know if it'll come to pass, but I'm hoping for fewer restrictions for movement and for trade, because even with some of the startups that I advise and some of the ones that I work with right now, it's not enough to solve a problem in one country. It's always important to think about how that problem is being experienced by other people and how they could benefit from your technology solution. The Africa Free Trade Area Agreement, what I hope for is fewer restrictions for technology companies to be able to enter new markets.
What are at the moment the biggest challenge for the civil society in Kenya or Eastern Africa?
Oh, one of the biggest issues for civil society generally is just sustainability, being able to continue to do their work, and who basically is able to fund that sort of work for how long. That's always quite a challenge.
How is sustainability a topic at the moment, and how is it seen by not only by the government but also by the people?
Sustainability is a key topic, and the really great thing about it is the framework provided by the Sustainable Development Goals. It's been really great to see it being embraced not only by civil society, but also by companies. Like you mentioned, Safaricom, Kenya Commercial Bank in Kenya, and many other companies, I'm sure, around Africa, look at what can they do to to have a positive impact in society, and they use the Sustainable Development Goals as a useful framework or touch point, right? Other sustainability questions, so for example, issues around environment, issues around clean water, access to education, all of those are wonderfully captured by the Sustainable Development Goals, and there's a lot more awareness that these are things to watch out for and to advocate for. What I do hope for is more awareness and more work towards fulfilling some of those goals or making progress and on as many indicators as we can.
Do you have a good example for one of these sustainable things the companies are doing?
Safaricom is doing some really good work around access to education. They support, for a long time, the supported education around the country. And most recently, I just saw some of the, they were providing sanitary towels for girls all around the country who are about to do exams. So they're very thoughtful around access to education and energy and communications. So that is one example of a company that's really on the forefront of positive impact to society.
Great. Just let us take a look on the next 5 to 10 years. What do you expect? What will happen?
I don't know what will happen, but what I can tell you is what I hope for. One of the biggest challenges is the number of jobs that are being created. We have a lot of young people, and sadly, we do not have enough jobs being created. What I do hope for is that those young people can find a way to see the entrepreneurial journey as a way to make a living for themselves and for and hopefully to employ others. So that's number one. What I do hope for is that we can lean on use of open source technology as a bedrock for education, because that's a very cost-effective way of disseminating the necessary technology skills as far out as we can, not just to have these efforts in the major cities, to try and do this in as many places as possible, like Turkana, like Kisumu, Eldoret, all of these places around Kenya, but then also outside of Kenya in other countries, that they can look at the idea of not only rural electrification, but then also digital skills for young people wherever they are, providing infrastructure so that they can be participants in the digital economy. That's what I hope for, because we can take the numbers, the shifting demographics in Africa, and see it as a youth windfall, not a youth curse or deluge or whatever. We can switch it up and see these young people as an important resource.
Great. Thanks for the talk.
Kopf der Woche. Podcast.